Chapter 6 The Cold Store. Nail drew back the bolts on the door and opened the cold store. It had been a root cellar, Drusha decided, serving the fortress kitchens through the winter when there had still been a garrison to feed. The walls were whitewashed. There were 18 steel gurneys arranged in rows, green plastic sheeting bagging the bodies. More gurneys were folded and stacked along the wall as if other visitors were presently expected. Monitoring equipment was set up between the gurneys, radiating fields of prickly blue light.
"It's not cold enough," Drusha said immediately. "It's not cold enough, and it's too damp. This is no place for the preservation of organic remains."
"Correct," said Eisenhorn. "Hence the stasis field generators."
"And if the generator power fails?" asked Drusha.
"Then the fortress is going to start to stink,"
said Nail.
"And your evidence will be lost," said Drusha.
"Evaluation, please, Magos," said Eisenhorn. "I understand it will be preliminary."
"Preliminary. Very well,"
Drusha said, nodding. He took off his spectacles, wiped the lenses and put them back on, but did not move.
"These people were not the victims of Ursid attacks," he said. There was a pause. Nail looked at him.
"You haven't even opened a bag yet, Magos,"
he said, gesturing toward the rows of gurneys.
"Nevertheless," said Drusha.
"Let him continue,"
said Eisenhorn.
"Magos, not Ursid attacks."
"No, sir." "But there was evidence of feeding, Valentin," said Max, bewildered. "I mean, gross evidence. You always told me to look for—"
"I think Ursids may have fed on them, but they didn't kill them."
"Expand," said Eisenhorn.
"Ursids kill people," said Drusha, "especially the smaller, more aggressive Ursa Minora, but they don't hunt them for food. An Ursid kills a man because they meet by accident. The Ursid reacts in surprise or in defense of young. It kills swiftly."
"Yeah, then it feeds," said Max.
"Sometimes," Drusha replied. "Ursids are omnivorous. They will eat flesh, meat of any sort, actually, even human. One might encounter a man, kill him, then feed. Or it might feed on a body if it finds one. But human flesh is not a regular part of its diet. It does not seek it out."
"But a rogue animal," said Max. "One that's got a taste for it. I mean, a taste for human flesh.
That happens, doesn't it? You once told me that."
"It does," said Drusha. "It's very rare. The man-eater syndrome. Often a diseased or wounded animal, one whose aggression is compounded, multiplied."
"So a rogue animal did this?"
asked Nail.
"Again, no," said Drusha.
"You can tell that without even looking?" asked Nail.
"You can compare bite prints or something," suggested Max.
"I can tell it by counting," said Drusha. 18 bodies. 15 male, 3 female. Perhaps more to come, in a period of a year or two.
How many Ursids are there in the Carinines?"
Nail and Max looked at each other.
"I'll tell you," Drusha began. "Population sparse," said Audler Jaff suddenly. "As with all major carnivores or apex predators, an Ursid's average feeding ground is 300 square kilometers, slightly more for Minora. When young are present, the range increases. Thus we might calculate the distributed population of the region by taking the overall size of the area and dividing by an averaged figure of 300. Thus, about 130. "Very good," said Drusha.
130 Ursids in these woods," said Nail.
"In this province," corrected Drusha. "Actually, I was allowing for the entire run of the Carinine Belt," said Jaff.
"I don't get it," said Max. 130. That's a lot of Ursids." Drusha looked at Jaff.
"How much does an adult Ursid consume in a year, ma'am?"
"As much as it can," she replied. "But conservatively, 3 times its body weight."
"You see," said Drusha. "One Ursid would not have killed and eaten 18-plus human beings."
"Hang on," said Nail. "You just said 130 of them."
"As a total, distributed population," said Drusha, "we might attribute 1 or perhaps 2 deaths in a 5-year period to accidental encounter and misadventure. Or we might explain multiple deaths to the action of a rogue animal, a man-eater, which, as I mentioned, is an extremely rare phenomenon. So a man-eater might have, and I stress it's unlikely, killed 18 poor souls, but he would not have eaten them all. That's simply too much food, even for a large and aggressive Ursid."
Eisenhorn looked at him, steadily.
"Interesting," he said.
preliminary, said Drusha.
Then go beyond preliminary. What do you think killed them?
Something else, said Drusha. If examination reveals ursid feeding patterns, and I confidently expect it will be indicative of a non-frenzied pattern, then we might surmise that the local ursid population devoured found corpses. But they did not make the kills. Well, surely, said Max, other ursids could have found and fed upon kills made by the rogue animal. You said it couldn't eat them all itself. That's possible, but again, unlikely, said Drusha. It's a matter of territory. Minora are fiercely territorial. But let's take a look.
He walked over to the nearest gurney.
Do you have any oil of arsakil?
Asked Max, holding out a small pot.
I was going to say true heart, he replied.
Don't be smart, she said, but grinned.
Arsakil or nothing.
He took the pot, smeared some under his nose, and unzipped the bag. He stared for a moment.
Gonna throw up? Max asked.
No, he said. He took off his spectacles and began to fiddle with them.
I just want to be able to see straight.
Audler Jaff casually took the spectacles out of his hands and performed three quick, deft twists. She reached up and put them back on his nose gently. They sat perfectly straight. Drusha blinked.
Goodness me, he said. Keep going, Magos, Jaff whispered as she stepped back. You're impressing him.
Drusha plucked a pair of surgical gloves from a carton, put them on, and picked up a stainless steel probe from a tray. He hunched down and began to examine the exposed corpse. It was little more than a skeleton, blackened with old blood and tatters of congealed tissue.
There is some indication of an ursid feeding pattern. Tooth marks on the ribs here. If I can get a cast, I can confirm. Do you have an electromacroscope?
Yes,
said Eisenhorn.
Then I can provide a comparative for you in a couple of hours. A side-by-side of bite marks and dental impressions. I think it will confirm the feeding patterns of several individual ursids. It's not frenzied, just as I expected.
They were scavenging. He looked up.
Was there feeding residue at the sites? He asked.
Feeding what? Asked Max.
Residue. Ursids are not clean eaters. They will tear chunks off, scatter bones, ribs, the bones of extremities.
Some of the bodies were washed down by meltwater, said Eisenhorn, so we have no idea where they were killed.
But the ones that were found in situ?
Where you presume they were slain?
No, said Max. No residue. That's odd, said Drusha.
Expand, said Eisenhorn.
It suggests those locations were not the scenes of the crimes, so to speak. It suggests the killing and perhaps even the feeding happened elsewhere.
They were dump sites? Asked Max.
They were dump sites,
Drusha nodded.
That's criminal pathology, said Eisenhorn.
It is, agreed Drusha. Ursids may have grazed the kills and destroyed evidence. That might have been intentional. But the victims were killed elsewhere, then dumped. Add to that the extremely unlikely coincidence that all the victims cannot be identified on any local or planetary database. Even rogue ursid man-eaters do not select their prey on the basis of identity profiling, which means you're looking for human actors, Inquisitor. Men did this. This is serial execution, or serial murder. He looked at Eisenhorn. But you knew that already, didn't you?
Drusha asked.
Eisenhorn didn't reply. Then tell me, if you want me to work at optimum efficiency, said Drusha, what brought the Inquisition into this?
18 deaths,
said Nail, flatly.
No, said Drusha, still looking straight at Eisenhorn. That's a dreadful tally, but serial murder is still within the purview of the Marshal Division. There's something else. You have positively identified at least one of these bodies, haven't you?
Long before you even got here.